BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
3, 2, 1. When is the first time you came out as queer at work?
I've never come out as queer at work. I probably mentioned it at some point if it came up or if it was relevant, but I don't think I've ever had a job where it felt like it was necessary. But also, you have a proper job where you wear suits and stuff, like you go into a courtroom, and I imagine it's different for you.
Yes, I imagine it is. And there's already a lot of issues around feeling a bit out of place sometimes because I don't look the way people expect an expert to look. And so add to that, bisexuality, I think, can be a lot for people. So I've come out to the odd colleague here and there for about a decade, but probably the first ever that I did it in a job interview style situation was, in fact, when I pitched the concept that would become our Bad People podcast to the BBC. Oh. And I had no idea what I was missing until I did it. So being out at work has been a revolutionary aspect of me. I just feel like I'm so much more able to be fully myself and to talk about all aspects of me. And my heart feels so much more open at work, which is so nice. Oh. So I just sort of added it in my pitch. I was like, by the way, I'm bi. And they reacted really well. And so I felt safe. And here we are. And they, even when I then said, can we do some Pride Month episodes on bisexuality? They're like, yeah.
That's so nice. I love that.
On this episode of Bi People, Scandalous Sexuality, where we can find bi and pan representation in politics and why so few people come out as bi at work.
Scandalous sexuality. Ooh.
Note that on this episode, we mention suicide, drug abuse, and abusive relationships.
And as always, there may be some strong language.
I'm Dr. Julia Shaw.
And I'm Sophie Hagen.
And this is Bi People.
This is Bi People.
Our story starts in 2018 in the 25th Congressional District of California. Katie Hill is working on the campaign trail as a Democrat. And this district had been held by Republicans since it was formed in 1993. So winning it would be a big victory. At this point, Katie is described as one of the Democrats' most promising new candidates, and she's endorsed by Obama. And Vice World News made a docuseries following her whole campaign and calling her campaign the most millennial race for Congress.
That's not a compliment.
Hi, everyone. I'm Katie Hill, and I am running to take out Steve Knight, the last Republican in LA County and one of the top seats in the whole country for us to take back the House.
We as women say that we support other women, but when it comes down to it, why aren't we actually supporting other women?
In the primaries, women are doing awesome. What happens in the general election is another question.
This election can come down to just a handful of votes. Let's make this happen. You ready to win?
Yeah, that sounds very U.S. politics.
It does. And Katie already stands out at this point as a young woman running for Congress, so there's not that many women. And she also stands out because she's bisexual. In fact, Katie was one of the first people running for Congress ever who openly identified as bi. And so this was despite other politicians encouraging her not to be out because she could pass as heterosexual. As she said, in quotes, on the campaign trail, having to explain what bisexuality is to people was pretty unbelievable. People were like, but you're married to a man. And so a lot of people encouraged me to not be open about it. But I felt like it was important for me. Close quotes.
I wonder if Katie, part of her coming out was because it might be a good angle. You know, like it could potentially get her more sort of young progressive votes, you know, rather than coming out despite of losing votes.
What you're implying is that people may be courting what's called the lavender vote. So that echoes the classic narrative of coming out, quote unquote, for attention.
I mean, I do think she wants attention because she wants votes, because she wants power, right? I mean, that's why she's a politician. I mean, if it was just like a random woman in my workplace who came out, I wouldn't be like, oh, you're attention-seeking whore. I think it would almost be condescending to not assume that she had a political, press angle.
Why?
Because it's politics.
Yeah, but the politics is also so heterosexual and so heteronormative that people are forced to be in boxes. And so because we assume that people have to identify themselves as not that, just like in any other context, just like I have to say I'm bi as well, because it's assumed I'm straight otherwise. It's the same for her. And so otherwise she's basically in the hiding the whole time. So either she comes out or she pretends she's not that. And when people say or assume she's straight, she doesn't correct them.
I don't like the idea that the sort of aspect of queerness is always this very emotional thing. Like, queer people can also be calculating politicians who are like, let's see if I can get some votes out of this. Let's see if I can get some press attention for this.
It can be both, right?
I'm trying to think if I know any bisexual politicians at all, apart from her.
So worldwide, since 1977, there have only been 58 elected officials who are recorded as being out as bi, 4 as pansexual, and 19 as queer. In the whole world.
I mean, it's not that many, but then again, they're just the ones that are out, right? There's probably more.
Yes, definitely. There's definitely more people in politics who are bisexual, but almost no one's out.
Yeah.
And so these numbers come from Dr. Andrew Reynolds, who's the founder of Queer Politics at Princeton University. And he curates a data set of over 1,000 elected officials worldwide who are out as LGBTQ. And the data set ranges from 1977 to 2021. According to Reynolds, this means that about 7% of the elected officials who've come out as LGBT plus identify as bi, pan, or queer. So it's disproportionately low, even among queer people. And based on the percent of LGBT plus people who identify as bi, it should be the biggest single group. So there should be more people who identify as bi than people who identify as gay or lesbian or trans.
So are we saying that they don't come out as bi because it's not as acceptable as being like gay or a lesbian?
From what I've seen, yeah, that's exactly right. And in most workplaces, it's hard to come out as bi. So it's not just politics where people aren't out. According to a UK Trades Union Congress report published in 2019, they found that 4 in 10 bisexuals were not out to anybody they worked with, compared to only 1.5 out of 10 lesbians and gay men.
If I was very much gay and only liked, I mean, I'm non-binary, but let's say women, it feels to me that would be harder than being bisexual. So I have like an emotional reaction when you say that it's harder to be bi, where I'm like, that doesn't feel right. But I also know feelings aren't facts. You've taught me that. I'm trying to think about what the explanation could also be. And I was wondering if maybe people don't generally come out unless they feel like they have to. So for example, if it's a bisexual person dating someone of the, you know, quote unquote opposite sex, maybe they don't feel like they need to say that they're bi because they can, again, quote unquote, get away with being seen as straight. Do you know what I mean? Like, could that also be a reason why fewer bi people are out?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
The camouflage effect of being bi and being able to blend in and be heterosexual if you need to be, or look heterosexual if you need to. There's a potential for that. I think when you ask people why they're not out, though, that's not the reason they give. People would rather be out often at work. And the reason that people give is that they're worried about being sexualized. So bisexuality is often hypersexualized, which means that when you come out as bi, people often first think, you know, dirty thoughts. So rather than recognizing it as an identity and part of who someone is. So if you say you're gay, I think in many workplaces today in the UK, you are going to get a reaction of like, oh, okay. Whereas if you say you're bi, you're going to get a million questions. And people might go say things like, are you sure? Or what does that mean? Or, oh, it's a bit much. Like, why are you telling me this? So there's still more likely to be that sort of reaction where it's as if I'm telling them that I enjoy threesomes or that I somehow am talking about sex that I like to have rather than an identity, rather than who I am. So going back to Katie Hill's race for Congress.
Yeah. So did it hold her back that she came out, or did it work?
Did it work? Wink. Lavender vote. Did courted. So Katie Hill was one of the new young Democrats that made the 2019 House of Representatives, and it was the most racially diverse and most female group in the institution's 200-year history. And so she was California's first openly bisexual person to be elected to Congress.
That's so cool.
But Then a scandal hit. Oh. I'm actually happy to say that it wasn't her coming out that was the scandal, because unfortunately there are still bi and pan people who get blackmailed by the press. But the scandal that the tabloids latched onto was still sexual. So less than a year after winning, a right-wing news blog published a report on an alleged affair between Hill and a member of her staff.
And was the member of her staff a man or a woman? Or
a man. They both deny the affair. But then she was accused of something else. So she was basically already on this wave of tabloid coverage. And then she was accused of something else that she didn't deny, where details of a relationship were published between Katie, her husband Kenny, and a young female member of her campaign staff.
So, like, a throuple? Like, a polyamorous relationship?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I mean, I guess you said a young female member of her staff, so I guess there's, like, a mismatch in the power dynamics?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, the throuple itself, I agree. Fine. Cool. Go play. There was a mismatch in power dynamics. So it was inappropriate that she was dating this female campaign staffer who worked for her. But it was the three-way relationship piece of it that was made sensational. And what's worse, the tabloids didn't just write about the throuple. Get this. They also published naked photos of Katie, not in the throuple, but specifically with guess whom? The female member of her campaign staff.
The young... Oh, that's so shitty. It wasn't like all three of them together. It wasn't the threesome they had photos of. It was just the two ladies.
The part that was sensationalized was the naked woman. Yeah, not the man. The man was sort of secondary in this particular situation.
Thirdendary.
As opposed to secondary. Nice.
How embarrassing that you're the scientist, and yet I knew that. It's a stereotype, isn't it, that bi people just love to have threesomes?
It is a stereotype, yeah.
And is it true?
Well, do you love to have threesomes?
Absolutely not. Oh. I mean, I've not tried it, but it's one of those things I'm pretty sure I don't.
Well, so there you go. Already one bi queer person has said, no, threesomes, not for me. Tabloids, cover that. Bisexual people also sometimes don't like threesomes. So in a survey of over 2,000 adults, they found that 10.3% of women and 17.8% of men had had a threesome. And in 2020, a journalist wrote one of my favorite sentences I've ever read on this, which is that having had a threesome is about as common as owning a cat.
Okay, as in you always have that one friend who has way too many?
And also, like cats, even more people want to have threesomes. Like, how many people browse kitty pictures and don't actually go get a cat? Similar with threesomes. So guess how many people want to have a threesome?
I would say as many people as there are extroverts.
Ooh. I actually don't know how many people.
Well, there's also ambiverts, which would be the bisexuals of the introverts and extroverts.
Exactly. In a representative 2020 sample from the US, 81%. Indicated that they currently had at least some interest in having a threesome. And across many studies, researchers repeatedly find that almost everyone has fantasized about them. So there's an interest, there's fantasies, and then there's behavior. And they're all separate, but all of them are quite common.
So a lot of people want threesomes. But is there anything that tells us that bi people want them more?
So, to answer that, let's turn to research by Dr. Ryan Scotes, who has self-described as having the world's first PhD in threesomes.
Yeah, I'm a doctor in threesomes. Wanna help me do some research? I have a PhD.
So Scotes has found an overrepresentation of sexual minority individuals among those who have had threesomes. So in one of his studies, only 16% of women who had had threesomes had identified as entirely heterosexual. The majority, so 52%, identified as bi. This was flipped for the men. So 45% of the men identified as entirely heterosexual, and only 16% identified as bisexual. Still, for both men and women, this was an overrepresentation of bisexual people amongst people who had engaged in threesomes.
I think it makes sense to me because I feel like once you have had to give sexuality a second thought, And then you might end up being in circles where everyone's just a bit more open-minded. I feel like once you're in that environment, it's sort of easier to take the next step. Where if you're living in this like very heteronormative world where everyone around you are heterosexual and like, you know, by the age of 20, you've met the one and it's the other sex and then you get married and you have kids, like you might not even be exposed to the option of having a threesome. I mean, at this point, I don't think I know anyone who hasn't been to a sex club. That's like the norm now in like my group of friends, right? So I think it makes sense. But also, what are we talking about with threesomes? Is it like two women and a man, two men and a woman, all of the same? Do straight people have threesomes with people of their own sex?
Yes. So,
right.
That's a good question. So straight people often have threesomes with members of their own sex and sexuality. The most acceptable threesome, it's obviously male, female, female, and everything the women are doing is for the men. Basically, it's a pornographic dream for men. So people, especially men who've had threesomes, as you say, there's sort of this idea of, ooh, it's a bucket list achievement, and you're so lucky that you've had a threesome with two women. And that's because of a specific view of it, which is that, again, it's all for the man, and it actually shows how extra heterosexual you are. You can handle two women at once. And it's almost the assumption that, well, if they do stuff, if the women do stuff with each other, it's not really for their pleasure, it's just sort of play. And of course, it can be the other way around, that the women are much more interested in each other and the man is a sort of peripheral, like you get to kind of be here as well. And that's actually where the pleasure lurks. What are your thoughts? You look like you're in either picturing threesomes at the moment or we've lost Sophie.
I am thinking I was going through my head about like how in porn, I feel like I've seen as much MFF, male, female, female, as I have seen male, male, female. And I've seen a lot of male, 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 female.
Okay. As in it exists or you've watched it? Or both?
A bit of both. I'm curious. I'm like, where do they find the stamina, you know? In terms of Katie, though, do we know where the press got the photos of her and the staff member?
Katie Hill says that they were from her husband. And so they had broken up earlier that year, and she says that he was out for revenge after what she claims was a long, abusive relationship. According to Vanity Fair, she claimed that in 2018, her ex-husband threatened that he would, quote-unquote, go nuclear and blow up her campaign. He denies that he shared the images and said that his computer was hacked.
Uh-huh. I mean, it all sounds possible.
Yes. And she certainly talked about it as revenge porn.
Oh, that must have been so hard for Katie Hill, right?
Yeah.
It's hard even if you're not a politician in a throuple with an abusive ex. I mean, even just having your nudes published without your consent is horrible.
Yeah. So here's a clip of Katie speaking about it from Vice News.
I mean, it's just horrifying. And over half of women who have been victims of revenge porn or cyber exploitation have contemplated suicide. Many have attempted it. And tragically, people have died. I think that there's this element of the public shaming and the fact that you have to sort of come to terms with the knowledge that you will never get ownership of those photos back. Once they're out there, they're there forever. It drove me to suicidal thoughts, and that's something that I've been open about.
And she also said that the magnitude of the abuse that she faced in response to these naked photos was in part due to her gender and sexuality. So speaking to The Guardian, she said, in quotes, "These images are consumed and sensationalized and plastered everywhere. I think there's been one or two situations where men have had embarrassing photos leaked of them, but these are very clearly blurred out. My sexuality, the fact that I was bi, was an even bigger factor." She goes on to say, "There were tame pictures that would have told the same story. You don't need the X-rated ones. But it was the sexualization of it, the sensationalization of it, the fact that I was young and bi."
It's the hypersexualization again, isn't
right.
it?
Exactly. And so that can be harmful in lots of different ways for bisexual people. And after this public humiliation, she resigned. So here's a clip from her resignation speech.
I will never shirk my responsibility for this sudden ending to my time here. But I have to say more because this is bigger than me. I am leaving now because of a double standard. I'm leaving because I no longer want to be used as a bargaining chip. I'm leaving because I didn't want to be peddled by papers and blogs and websites used by shameless operatives for the dirtiest gutter politics that I've ever seen, and the right-wing media to drive clicks and expand their audience by distributing intimate photos of me taken without my knowledge, let alone my consent, for the sexual entertainment of millions. I'm leaving because of a misogynistic culture that gleefully consumed my naked pictures, capitalized on my sexuality, and enabled my abusive ex to continue that abuse, this time with the entire country watching.
I think it's tempting to see this as one story about one person instead of what it is, which is a reflection of how society works. Like, whenever a woman attempts to get any kind of power, the patriarchy essentially will try and take them down, and the media will help with trying to take them down because a woman in power is so incredibly threatening. And I think, like, if it hadn't been this, if it hadn't been these nude photos, it would have been something else, because not only is she, you know, a woman in with political power, she's also a bisexual woman with political power. Like, it triggers the patriarchy's little brain into being very, very intimidated by this.
Yeah.
This is why it's not just easy. You know, like, it's Pride Month and a lot of people are like, come out, you know, tell people it's okay. And I totally get where that's coming from, but it's not as simple. This is one of, like, the hidden consequences that people don't always see as related to that, but it totally is.
Well, it's hidden, or it's so spectacular that it's intimidating, right? So if you see someone being treated this way, then it might well make you go, oh, I don't want to be as a woman in those spaces. I don't want to go into politics. Mm. I don't want to be treated like that. I don't want to be my naked photos to be leaked by an ex-partner because I've, you know, I'm in this throuple and I'm in a public position and I'm bi. So I think it very much also can be sort of explicitly intimidating for people to not come out. But you're right. I think people who aren't queer, who see these stories, sort of go, oh, you know, it's a scandal. But they don't necessarily see the immense effects this can have on the psychological well-being of people and people's ability to feel like they can come out into a world that continues to do these things to people who identify as bi.
Yeah. So, like, that's what the media is saying. They're saying, don't come here and have political power and think that you can just, you know, show people that it's okay to be bisexual and a woman. But they're also showing everyone else, like, see, you know, like, whatever, the Romans who had, you know, they put, like, heads on a stick outside of their village to show people what they do to their enemies, right? It's sort of like that.
Yeah, this is what happens when you come out into our space. That's right.
Yeah, when you cross us. Yeah.
Probably most of that, in fact, is not like a conscious, not like someone sitting there going, how do we take down the woman? It's more of this will make a sensational story. Exactly. And the culture that goes along with that.
Yeah.
And like the editor that says, yes, let's publish that story. And the magazine that says, yes, let's pay for that story. Mm. And the person who pays for the images.
And the readers,
who click on it. And who, yeah, exactly. So that's the cycle that needs to stop in some ways. So she sued the outlets who published the photos. Speaking of trying to make it stop, Katie Hill is not one to take it sort of without a fight. And so she sued the outlets and said, this is completely unacceptable for publishing the photos. So that included a US outlet and a UK outlet. In the summer of 2021, after an unsuccessful, what was called revenge porn lawsuit, she was ordered to pay about $220,000 in attorney's fees to the Daily Mail and some journalists. Yeah. She lost.
She had to pay.
She lost the case. And so you have to cover fees.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Still, she did use this to raise awareness for how difficult it is for victims to succeed and how the systems need to change.
So how is she doing today?
So I actually met Katie in 2021, and she is well-spoken and still passionate about politics. She's really funny. So she had a politics podcast for a while called Naked Truth.
Lovely. Lovely. Yes.
So she really leaned in and sort of took control as much as she could of the narrative. And when I met her, she was heavily pregnant with the child of, remember, the male campaign staffer, the first scandal that I introduced you to.
Yeah. That she said wasn't real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she's together with him. And his name is Alex Thomas. And she has said that they are each other's rocks and that they are what she calls trauma bonded from the whole experience around the scandals.
Oh, I mean, that's lovely, isn't it?
Lovely and sad and complicated all at once.
Yeah, like, not that her story is lovely, you know, but happy she seems to be doing all right.
Yeah. So, on that note, this is the end of our four special bonus episodes of Bi People. Woo! Or boo, sad.
Aww.
And how do you think we should end this wonderful mini-series that has been an absolute joy to make together with you and the team? But we will be back in your feeds with our usual series, Bad People, very soon.
Don't sound so disappointed, Julia.
I can say it again. Bad People. I do love Bad People. I just love all the ethical, interesting, crimey things that we talk about. And I think some of the...
Yeah, I miss the murders too.
The murders and the crimes. And it's going to be also really fun to get back into that. And in case you haven't listened to Bad People before, we also cover lots of queer issues in Bad People, partly because that's who we are, and also partly because we cover cases and aspects of cases and crimes that interest us, that relate to queer issues. So if you're a fan of Bi People, stay with us. You'll like Bad People, too. This episode of Bi People was produced by Caroline Steele in partnership with The Open University. The assistant producers are Simona Ratta and Emily Bird. Our editor is Rami Tsabar. Music by Matt Chandler. The commissioning executive is Dylan Haskins, with additional support from Adam Eland. If you like this podcast, then do check out other BBC Sounds content. Bye!
Bye!
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Scarlett and I want to believe.
And I'm Scott and I really don't.
We're here to uncover mysteries and
the unexplained.
This is a proper hotspot for ghost activity. Like, we are harnessing ancient spiritual powers. Dun, dun, dun. I will let you touch me, crystals.
I'm all right, thanks.
Unbelievable. I feel like this podcast could answer the biggest questions in biology.
Biology, yeah.
Scarlett Moffat wants to believe.
Listen on BBC Sounds. Shh, there's ghosts listening.